T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Sox in the postseason, TB12 in the Pats, and everything else. Talk about it now with Bradford and Reamer. Sports talk on the weekend continues right now with Rob Bradford and Alex Reamer on Sports Radio WEEI.
So, some exciting stuff for us here, Rob. Two breaking injury stories while we're on the air here this afternoon. First of all, I mentioned it in trending. We talked about it last segment. Rob Gronkowski, Adam Schefter with the report as well, just coming out. Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski is, quote, highly unlikely to play Sunday versus the Bears, echoing McBride's report that he did not travel with the team to Chicago. And typically, with back with Gronk, you go back to 2016, the injury that plagued him throughout college. You mentioned it's why he dropped in the draft. This, historically with Gronk, this has not just been take a week off stuff and then you're back. It has not worked that way with him. So we will see. We will see. And it's interesting because you go back to that game against the Chiefs, Gronk was a non-factor offensively up until the fourth quarter. And you wonder, well, how come Brady hasn't thrown him the ball more? Well, maybe because he's been dealing with something and he only has so many bullets. And so it's not good news at all.
Yeah, at first it was their quadruple teaming
right.
him.
Which was true.
To an extent. But I think that was maybe even overblown a little bit. Because he had such a huge first game. And he comes out and all of a sudden
single-handedly beat the Texans.
Yeah,
much.
And then Matt Patricia has figured out the Gronk scenario, and so it. But I think the truth lied somewhere in the middle, and then you get to the point, like you said, and that ankle is a problem too. You saw him limping around. Yeah, so now you go to this game, you go to how the Patriots function, and all of a sudden Josh Gordon becomes a guy. Josh Gordon becomes an important yep. guy. So now what are the legitimate weapons? James White, Josh Gordon, Julian Edelman, okay, Chris Hogan, throw him in the mix. I'm not counting.
Sony Michel. Important than the running game.
Philip Dorsett is whatever he is. And so it's enough to beat the Bears.
It is, but long term, and what Gronk gave the Patriots is stretch the middle of the field. Really
take away
open things up.
Take away defenders.
Open up the middle of the field. And you're right, with Gronk out, now more of that focus goes to Julian Edelman, so which makes Josh Gordon all the more important. And he did have 5 catches, led the team in receptions last week, but still not exactly on the same page.
Does it seem like, have you seen, I was thinking about the Josh Gordon thing. Have you watched Josh Gordon said, oh my goodness, what an insane talent? Yet.
Not yet, but he's made some real impressive catches. Like even that touchdown grab against Indianapolis. He had defenders all over him. He changed routes, I think, at one point. That slant catch that he even had first play against Kansas City, guys were all over him. You see just how strong he is,
I think,
Josh Gordon.
Yeah, and I think that what we don't factor...
So I've been impressed.
What we don't factor in when we're trying to figure out, you know, holding our breath about is he going to get suspended again or what's going to happen, is he going to show up to work or anything along those lines. What we don't factor in, he's 5 years older,
yep.
right?
From 2013, yeah.
And so he's 5 years older at his peak abilities, and I don't think you can discount that. Even though he hasn't been playing, there's not a lot of wear and tear, but I don't think you're going to see Tyreek Hill out there.
No.
You know, I don't think guys run him running by guys. He's still it's good to know that you have a wide receiver that Tom Brady trusts and a wide receiver who seemingly knows the plays.
Right, and he's leapfrogged Dorsett on the depth chart. Dorsett was barely out there against the Chiefs. Cordarrelle Patterson, I think, was out there for only 3 plays or something like that against Kansas City. So you've seen how quickly Gordon has leapfrogged the depth chart, which is a commentary probably on him, but also a commentary on how lousy the other options were as well.
He's not Michael Floyd, right?
No.
He's better than Michael
yes.
Floyd.
Yes, he is. He's already made a bigger
put it on the bumper
than
stickers.
Michael Floyd. Better than Floyd. I love it. Other injury news, Chris Sale asked about his stomach illness at Fenway Park this afternoon. He said, quote, I had irritation from a belly button ring. Constantly taking it in and out caused irritation. Doctors and nurses at MGH were awesome. Things happen. You handle them and keep moving forward. Sticking with your point, do you think this is sarcasm
for
Chris Sale?
Oh, 100% sarcasm.
Doesn't seem like anybody else has picked up on this, though. At least if I'm misreading all of these tweets.
No, I think people have. I mean,
I don't know.
Some aren't, but some want it to be true. But I think I saw Chris Mason of the Eagle Tribune in his headline said cracks, like Chris Sale cracks. Like that's what it should be. That should be the headline. I mean, does anyone honestly believe this is a belly button ring?
No.
No, of course not.
No.
It's good for him for spicing things up by throwing that out there, right? I don't know. Who cares?
And Jason Mastronato, though, it's tweeted it verbatim, like no mention of a crack. Bob Nightingale, USA Today, let's see. Same thing. Said he was hospitalized because of an irritation caused by a belly button ring. Really, that's a story, and he's sticking to it for now. So Bob Nightingale's pretty incredulous about this.
No, it's not. Here's the news flash for everybody. Everybody. It's not a belly button ring.
But he's saying it, though. That's the point. He's lying to us.
Yes, he is lying.
He's lying to us.
But lying happens, as we've learned from, like, Cora. Like, Cora, he's very good at whatever you want to call it, about this guy is available, that guy's not available. This is, and especially this time of year, you get a lot of, I don't want to say lying, but lying, right?
Yes.
Misdirection.
Now, if you've seen Chris Sale with his shirt off many times,
I've averted my eyes.
Have you ever noticed a belly button ring?
No. And we have, I think that, like I said before, there's photos. I think that when they were posing some getup without the shirt on, he does not have a belly button ring. Alex, what we do know is that he was throwing up.
Yes.
And
lost weight.
I maybe you know the world of the belly button rings better than
I was going to say. I think I should come to Los Angeles with you guys and do an investigative on this.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
A deep dive.
So would there be throwing up in belly button ring infections?
If it's infected, yeah. I think there could be, yeah.
No, that's
affects your intestines.
Now you're just trying to get to a trip to Los Angeles.
I would like a trip to L.A. as well, yes. I do want to take this call, Ken in California, because the topic amuses me. Ken?
Yes, hi. We all know we have the best outfield in the game, right?
A great defensive outfield, yes.
Okay. We not only have three great outfielders out there, we have four. J.D. Martinez is actually a very good outfielder also, right?
No.
He's average.
He's very good.
He's average. He's average in a park that it doesn't have unique dimensions. That is a very kind way to put it.
Okay, stay with me here. He's not a risk for us out in the outfield. And we all know why Mookie Betts plays right field when he originally was a second baseman. As I understand it, it's because with Pedroia at second base at the time, we didn't have room for Betts at second base, right?
Correct, yes, yes.
Okay, and what I'm going to suggest here is what I hope the chorus are already thinking about. It's about the long run. It's not about the World Series. But why not consider putting him back there? We know that in the short time he became the best right fielder in the game,
right.
He could. My guess, we all know, even though we haven't seen him much at second base, he's very likely a very, very good second baseman. Why not consider putting him there?
Permanently.
Putting Kinsler on the bench and let J.D. Martinez play more right field. And we don't have to play the shenanigans we're playing right now with Jackie Bradley.
What do you think, Rob? Mookie to second base permanently.
There's a lot to pick through there.
I mean, be good offense. I mean, put that bat at second Mookie, base. It's
so,
more valuable
so,
than the bat
so,
in right
so
field.
So Mookie Betts, once again, was designated as the best overall defender in all of baseball.
Yes.
All the positions, all nine positions, he is the best defender in baseball. So you want to basically take the guy who does something better than anybody else in baseball and say, you know what? We've seen you be good there enough. We want to devalue it by putting you somewhere
else. Go to second base. Exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, probably not happening. I know. The unimaginative scenario wins out. JBJ sits in L.A. And the fact is, too, you're going to get at least one lefty. Ryu is going to start one of game three or four, you would assume. I don't quite know where.
Kershaw and Hill. Right. I mean, this isn't the news flash.
I know. JD could still sit, maybe, perhaps.
Maybe.
Pinch hitting weapon off the bench.
He's very good with the bases loaded. So maybe you can only pinch hit him with the bases loaded.
Well, you know, if you're an analytical forward thinking GM, how about the defensive run saved? How many defensive runs are you saving yourself with the JBJ Benintendi Betts alignment in the early innings versus JD Martinez at the plate? You know, you could be saving more runs than Martinez is creating.
Whatever happened to the days of everyone just plays the position?
What, you know what? That's my other thing,
Let's
too.
Let's roll them out.
I'm banning the shift. I decided after watching this put, done. I'm done with the shift. I hate
really?
It. Nope, done. Second base, play at second base. Shortstop, play at shortstop. In Little League, when you're growing up, now with in Little League, are people shifting around too?
Oh, yeah, I bet there are Little League these coaches.
Oh,
are you kidding me?
Coaches, absolutely. Oh,
the in you know what's bizarre is that in that series against Houston, I saw at least as many balls that were hit just out of the reach of fielders than balls that were hit right at fielders.
I love it. I love it. When a team overly shifts and they get beat, I'm like, yes, yes, F you. Great. I love it. Every team where a manager does what Craig Counsell did the other night, takes out his starting pitcher after one batter, or you're doing these ridiculous shit. Good, good. I hope all these teams crash and burn in
here's games. Here's some, let me throw something out at you. Alex Cora, when he appeared on the podcast back in July, he said that he does not believe that the 2004 team would have won the World Series if they had all these analytics.
What does he mean by that?
Because he thought that was a team that just rolled it out, and just won on talent. But if you take the analytics and you don't need quite as much talent, so sort of like the stuff that we see with the pitch tipping, and there's a lot more than just talent in the postseason, right?
Way more.
So that he felt like that was just the grit and the guile and the talent and everything else. It's an interesting topic of conversation.
Yeah,
which I tried emailing Bill James about and did not get back to me.
You did not get. I may have ruined the WEI.com Bill James
relationship. Oh, did you?
I think I did.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I had one of our interns wanted to write a piece about Schilling, too, and he texted me. He's like, Schilling is not returning my text. I go, well, you can probably thank me for ruining that one as well.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
That's okay. What are you going to do? I want to grab Mike in North Providence. Mike.
Hey, guys. Hey, yeah, Mike. This is regards to the Pats and the whole Gronk being out thing. I think that Jacob Hollister, they wanted to get him integrated this year. And then he kind of missed his window early on because of his own injuries. And now you got Gronk being hurt. And, you know, I think if this is a playoff game, you're probably going to see Gronk out there. That's what it sounds like to me, is that sort of situation. And why not just, from the thinking of the organization, like, you know what, we wanted to get this guy going. Let's get him going right now. And I could also see them even, like, you know, doing a lot of four wide receiver sets in this game as well, just because of the Bears' pass rush. I mean, how do you counteract that? Spread these guys out.
Brady releasing the ball quickly to Edelman. You're right, Mike. But here's the thing. With Gronk out of the picture, you're giving Edelman more attention at the line.
Yeah, but the thing is, right, is it's all like since Gronk is hurt, you know what I'm saying? They're saying, okay, what's the best we can make out of this? And I think that, you know, definitely with Hollister, I saw he was back, and I'm like, I want to get this guy going because I know he's good, right? And I think that they felt he was good, and they like to run effective two tight end sets. So if this week, and maybe if Gronk's still like a little iffy next week, you can get him going. When Gronk comes back, now you have two tight ends who are into the flow that Tom can tap into.
Yeah, that's possible, Mike. Thanks for the call. Yeah, we'll see. You're right. He's not been officially ruled out yet, but in the past, none of these Gronk injury things are easy. You have Team Gronk releasing their own statement versus the Patriots statement. We had that weird Bleacher Report video a few years ago where Gronk says, I'm not coming back until I'm 100%. So history tells you that Gronk injury stuff is never just take a week off and then we'll see you back there.
You know,
it's always more complicated than that.
I miss the days before the Patriots offense actually changed how everything is done. When they did go four wide, everyone would be screaming, they're going four wide! They're going four wide! Can you believe it? They went four wide!
And now?
That was the heyday of Glenn, by the way. Freddie! They went four wide.
What they're doing is they're spreading out the defense, okay? They're spreading out the defense, Freddie, to counteract those sub-packages. I can see it now. But now you watch the Patriots in comparison to these other teams, Pat Mahomes, these young quarterbacks who can run. Patriots almost have a vanilla offense by comparison.
Kinda.
Right? It's different. I'm watching Josh Allen.
Well, you know what they're doing
guys.
Now? You know, ironically, what they're doing now is they're running the ball. Every time Sony Michel runs the ball, like, what? They're running the ball with a running back? It's not like the Dave Meggett, James White scat back?
Right. Well, even that, right? Every running back can catch the ball. That's their primary purpose out of the backfield, except Sony Michel, the Patriot. I mean, Belichick always ahead of the curve. Now he's going back.
Yeah, that's right.
High formation.
Circle of life. That's what it exactly what it is.
617-779-7937. Brad Phone Reamer back after this. And we can tease Mike Lowell will join us as well before the hour is out.
More with Bradford and Reamer right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
Six one seven 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 nine seven nine three seven. You know, Rob, when I look at this Red Sox playoff run that we've enjoyed.
I know you reflect on the run quite a bit.
Often, yes. It's been quite a run. Games 1 and 2 against the Yankees. You go back 2 weeks ago. David Price, never mind another playoff game in a Red Sox uniform. Not another game, period.
Ken Laird, Kerosene Ken.
Yes.
I think I was on Red Sox Review with him that night, proclaimed that he would never, ever pitch.
Our worst fears came to fruition, right? So Price blew up. The bullpen almost blew up in game one. And then game three, it's like a new team showed up.
New team. That's new the team. Postseason.
A turning point. And I believe we have our guest on the line right now. Yes, we do. All right. We teased him. We get him. Mike Lowell, welcome to the show. You're talking to Alex Reamer and, you know, Rob. Mike, how are you?
I'm great.
Wow.
Does Rob have to be on?
No, I do not. I can absolutely leave. I was actually telling Mike how I was, I figured out how you can buy books that you write at half price and you sell them for full price. So I want to reveal that I have been making money off of the book that we wrote together.
Okay, sweet. Where's my cut?
Oh, well,
you blew your cover there, Rob.
I mean, you were a small part of it.
Yes. We'll get to, buy Rob Bradford. That's what everyone buys.
We're gonna thank all 50 people that bought the book.
Come on.
50. I bought it. 51.
Yeah, there you go.
51. Thank you. 51 people. Yes.
I have a question for you, Mike. The so you have been in the World Series before.
He's World Series MVP, Rob.
Well, I know. I was going to get to that.
Okay, yes.
He's excelled in the World Series before. Going into the World Series, into that 2007 World Series, what are they not only what are they feeling right now, but we asked Joe Kelly was on with us before. He went as a member of the Cardinals into the play of the Red Sox in 2013. Did you know that you were going to roll over the Rockies, and did you have that feeling? Do all these teams have that feeling? We can't be stopped, and we're absolutely going to win. And how did you just feel heading into that?
Well, I'd say I had two very different feelings. I'll compare how I felt in 03 with the Marlins and then 07 with the Red Sox. With the Marlins, I think we went through such an emotional series with the whole Bartman thing and then winning Game 7 in Chicago that we were going to then play the winner of the Yankees-Red Sox. It ends up being the Yankees. And honestly, we were a little bit relieved because we felt like we matched up better with the Yankees than the Red Sox that year. But since we were so young and no one on our team had gotten a taste of it, I think we were more of the approach of let's just play our game and see if we could split in New York because we opened up in New York. So it was more like we played them in interleague. We know we can compete with them. Our starters have real good stuff, but there was a lot of we didn't know how things were going to pan out. With the Red Sox, I just thought for me, and this is nothing against, you know, the Rockies staff, they had about 8 days off because they rolled through everyone. Right. And then we go 7 games with Cleveland, and we felt like after 8 days that – the guy that they're setting up to really take it to us in game one was Jeff Francis, who, you know, topped out at probably, 90, 91. And we felt like, man, that this is a real good matchup for us. You know, David hit lefties really well that year, and we had a lot of righties that could just keep the line moving. So we felt like the matchup was so good. And, you know, that positive momentum that we had after Cleveland, I feel like the American League team, unless you're a very deep National League team, always has a little bit of an edge because you played the whole year with that extra hitter. And for us, when that extra hitter is a David Ortiz, I think it's a huge advantage because your team's constructed a little differently. You know, their National League teams aren't constructed in spring training to go to the World Series with a DH. You know, they might go in, you know, with a fourth outfielder, an extra infielder, but not a DH, and especially not a guy that's your three-hole hitter. So we felt like, honestly, we felt like the Rockies had no chance. That doesn't mean they had no chance. You have to execute, but we felt really good about what we were doing.
And I feel like it's a similar situation now this year, Mike. You look at the Dodgers, high-priced team, but their DH in Fenway would probably be Matt Kemp, a guy who's played sparingly so far this postseason. But when you look at this Red Sox team as a whole, franchise record, 108 wins, and you look at the last three Red Sox World Series winners since the turn of the century, I think this team is most analogous to your club in 2007 from the standpoint that you guys led wire to wire in the American League East. It was, you were down 3-1 against Cleveland, yes, but the whole season was really business-like. You were good, you were better than everyone else, and you took care of the competition. Wondering if you see those comparisons between the 07 team and this team now in 2018.
I think it's fair. I think, you know, when you look at, you know, from the top, Josh and Shill being our ones and two, and Dice K being someone that was very good to us that year, you can kind of throw in there a little bit of, you know, the kind of the three-headed monster that the Red Sox are throwing with a, you know, with Sale, Price, and I'll throw Porcello. Now, for me, the difference is that picking up Nate Eovaldi has, I think, turned the Red Sox into, you know, a team that's even more, I don't know the right word. They're just so deep because when he developed that cutter, I mean, that cutter at 92 with a fastball at 100 and then a curveball at about, you know, 82, 78, I mean, it adds such a different dimension to the way he's pitched. And, you know, I saw him pitch a lot with the Marlins, and it was a totally – it's a totally different guy, a guy who understands how to pitch up in the zone and everything. So I think he's been a glue that, you know, has just really made the – you eliminate that pressure of who's going to throw on 3 days rest. Oh, are we going to bump this guy up? You know, heck, let's use him in the bullpen. I mean, he's come through so big in so many different ways. That's been a pretty cool pickup. But with the two teams, you know, I look at both are very athletic. You know, we felt like we had speed, especially when we added, like, Jacoby, you know, along with Coco Chris, those guys. We felt like we had speed, good defense, good outfield defense. I mean, I don't think there's a team that's – I don't think there's a team out there that can compete with the outfield defense that the Red Sox throw this year. And just the lineups are deep, man. Like, for me, Houston had the best rotation for the whole season and the deepest in the postseason. You saw how the Red Sox – grinded out at bats, two out hits, two out RBIs, and it's just that you can't ever rest. You know, they're relentless. So I think those were kind of, let's call it characteristics of both teams, you know, on how they kind of approached how they approached the game.
You know, Mike, you mentioned Eovaldi, and we were talking about this early in the show. You know, people can make a lot of money, but good postseason performances. You would have made money no matter what. But when you're going through that, when you're winning the World Series MVP and going into a contract year, it does that, as a human being, does that cross your mind at all about, hey, you know what, if I, on this big stage, if I do something spectacular, like win the World Series MVP, that might up my value when free agency comes around? Because people remember, you go through that parade, there was a lot of re-signed Mike Lowell signs, right? So, I mean, but you know what I'm saying, though? I mean, he's making himself a lot of money, and you probably make yourself some money as well, right?
Well, yes. The human nature answer is yes. But I think my approach to, let's call it free agency, was I wanted to have a good season, you know, and I just felt things were clicking for me early, and I was able to ride it out for 6 months. So that 2007 season, I just felt like things were in sync for me, you know, from April all the way to September. And just from a personal standpoint, I was like, man, how disappointing would all this be if I had this great regular season and in the postseason I do nothing? So, like, I guess I kind of put the pressure on myself saying, you know, you can't be the guy that just has a good regular season and then does nothing in the postseason. But the approach I took was, it's the same, you know, it's a game, you know, you're facing the same pitches you faced them before. Are they good? Yes, absolutely. But you got to have, you know, confidence in what you bring to the table. Now, after the fact, when I hit well in the division series and the ALCS, and obviously the World Series was icing on the cake, I think it's almost like extra credit, because I think my regular season kind of ensured me, you know, someone was going to sign me to a real nice deal. But when you come through in the postseason, then I think it adds to the fact that, hey, when the stage is big, this guy can still, you know, be a productive player and help your team win. That's why, I don't know, I struggle so much with the fact, like, I know David Price has been one of the big guys. I really struggle with such a small sample that guys just, you know, choke in the playoffs. So I think guys get nervous and maybe they try something different, yeah, but not when you've gone six times in your career. You know, that's why I know we're switching gears a little, but, yeah, Nate Eovaldi, yes, he's made himself a lot of money. He's made himself years and dollars, and you know what? Deservedly so. He's come back from some pretty big surgeries, and for me, his start, his Game 3 start against the Yankees was, I think, the biggest game the Red Sox had all year.
It totally changed it.
He came through. Yeah, he came through with flying colors. I mean, if he would have gone four innings and given up one run and turned over the ball, I think people would have been happy, but he just totally dominated the Yankees and his start.
Yeah, we were saying earlier, Mike, before you opt on, games 1 and 2 against the Yankees, if you're a Red Sox fan, your worst fears come to fruition. The bullpen almost melts down in game 1. David Price melts down in game 2. And then in game 3, Evaldi pitches great. He scores 16 runs, and you've been a different team from there on out. On Price, though, Mike, you're a good person to talk to about this. So heading into his start in game 5, he had the 11 postseason starts, we know, winless. And, you know, I'm someone who looks at it typically and says, oh, well, good players are good players, small sample size. But then it was so tough to watch him after that inning and 2/3 outing against the Yankees. And you'd said, well, maybe he just can't do it in the playoffs. But you're saying, as a player, someone who's been in that spot, you don't buy that argument. You think that it's just a case of a guy like Price is a good pitcher who had not pitched well in the postseason versus there being good pitchers or good players who can't play well in the postseason.
Well, I'd say there's a lot of factors that go into it. I said, first, you're on a much shorter leash in the postseason. So let's start against the Yankees. Let's call it June 5th.
Mm-hmm.
If he has that start, they're not going to pull him in the second inning.
Right.
So if he ends up going 7 innings, throws 108 pitches, and gives up 4 runs or 3 runs, it's not considered a terrible start. The problem is, in the postseason, if you give up those 3 runs or 2 runs in the first 2 innings, boom, they yank you. So you kind of don't have that leash to play with. The reason I say I struggle with, especially a guy like David Price saying, oh, my God, he just can't do it, is because, if I'm not wrong, he pitched game 163 back in 2011 or whenever it was.
Yeah, with the Rays.
And that's not considered a playoff game. And he was lights out. And when he was a rookie to us in 2008, he was dominant. And I said, okay, so as a young guy, 22 or 23, however old he was, you can come through in the postseason and 3 years later come through, all of a sudden you're going to forget or get nervous or, you know, what everyone likes to say, oh, he chokes in the playoffs. God, I have such a hard time buying that. You know, the other factor is I think there are a lot of matchup problems. You know, the Yankees, and I would say even Houston, is not the greatest matchup for a lefty. They bring in a lot of good right-handed hitters that have some thunder, man. Like, they got 5-6 guys in the lineup that can really do a lot of damage. So that's not David Price. That's anyone, you know. So that plays a little bit of a factor. I was just happy that he warmed up he was ready to go in the 9th. He was on 3 days rest. The team really needed him to have a good start, and he had a phenomenal start. So I think you're talking about, like, the good mojo that teams have. I mean, how good do the Red Sox feel right now saying, okay, now we have a few days to let Sale get over, you know, how he was feeling. Hopefully he's 100%. We have Price coming off one of his best starts going in game 2. And then we have 2 righties that have been outstanding in Evaldi and Porcello. Like, they got to be feeling as good as ever, right?
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, one of the other heroes of the game the other night, Rafael Devers. And after the game, I was talking to Tim Hyers, the hitting coach, and he said that Cora's done a really good job of connecting guys that he's known who are out of the game with Devers and with guys like Tim. I know that obviously you were down in spring training for a few days helping Devers. Have you been in communication with him throughout the season? Has Cora reached out to kind of keep in touch with him to help him through this season, and what kind of interest have you taken in Devers?
Interest in following him a lot. I have a tough time, Rob, believing that, you know, 3 token days in spring training can have this.
See, I was trying to give you credit. I mean, what are I going to do?
Thank you. Thank you. But more, I wanted to know what type of kid he was, mm-hmm. you know, and I still stick to what I said in spring training. He's a product of his own talent, his own hitting talent. I mean, if you look at him now, he's, what, 21? So he should basically be entering the June draft this year as a junior in college, you know? And if you are Alex Bregman, the number 2 pick overall, and you get to the big leagues in 4 months, everyone would have been very impressed. This guy's got a year plus under his belt already. You know what I mean? And he's hit home runs off Chapman, and he's hit home runs off Verlander. And I think we kind of get ahead of ourselves that we're comparing him to a seasoned veteran, and he still doesn't have those reps. So I think Alex has done a great job. I mean, we talked during the season a lot about Devers, and I was like, so how's he doing? You know, he had a little stretch where he got errors, and I said, look, I don't watch every game. what do you got? And he goes, you know, he's actually made a lot of tough plays. He's played a couple ball into in between hops. You know, I feel like every once in a while he might get a little lazy with his feet. So he makes, let's call them silly errors. I said, yeah, those are 21-year-old errors. You know what I mean? And then you see the plays he makes. You know, he made a couple outstanding plays in the postseason. So what I like is that he's capable of making an exceptional play. So for me, if what you have to work on is the everyday play, wow, I can deal with that. I'm gonna get that, because with maturity that solves itself. So I'm just impressed that, you know, he can take a Verlander pitch the other way in a big situation, and you know, just be that bat that you can't just relax, you know, because I know everyone, and understandably so, you got to be on your A game to get Mookie Betts out and Benintendi and JD Martinez and Xander. I mean, when you start throwing in guys like Jackie Bradley and Christian Vasquez, who's swinging a good bat, and then you go on down the line when Devers comes in, it just adds to the pressure you can put on the team. And so I like seeing the fact that, you know, he does well, especially in big situations. But I think it's Alex's job, and he's done a great job of trying to put those guys in the best position to succeed. Because even when you juggle these lineups, when you don't play every day, you gotta make sure you're ready. And getting two at bats in one game and three in another and one in another and not starting for a young guy, that's not easy to do.
Mike, last thing for me, could you tell Kimbrough was tipping his pitches?
I'm terrible at that. I know Alex is really good at that. I'm sure with video and all these new cameras where they can do these 2,000 frames per second, they can probably superimpose, you know, one delivery over another and pick up things a little better. But honestly, I don't pay a lot of attention to it, because when I did, I always thought he was doing something wrong. So it never helped me out during my career. But you know what? Even if he wasn't tipping his pitches, and you tell him he's tipping his pitches, and he tried something different, and it allows him to throw strikes, man, Kimbrough's stuff is so nasty. He's almost at the point where he could tell the hitter, hey, 99's coming, and then here, my nasty curveball's coming, and he probably won't get hit all that well. So I was just, you know, for him also, a guy who's had so much success, I don't like to see guys struggle, whether it's a team you're rooting for or not. And he just looked lost, you know, when you see ball one, ball two, ball three, ball four, and there's four non-competitive pitches, you're like, uh-oh. And just to see him come in that last inning and be more of, you know, the Craig Kimbrough we're used to seeing, I mean, that's a big deal. You know, you don't want to – I know Alex gets a lot of credit for having my back, but you don't want that to happen 3-4 times in a row, because you might have to reevaluate the situation. So, once again, as a guy who's rooting for the Red Sox, I was happy to see him come through and see how, you know, with his nasty stuff, how good he really can be.
All right. 2007 World Series MVP, Mike Lowell, joining us on the show here. Mike, much appreciated. Thanks for taking some time.
No problem, guys. Enjoy.
All right, Mike. Talk to you later.
See you, Rob. Thanks for my shirt. Oh, it hasn't come in yet.
Oh, you too. Yeah, I work for Rob, Mike, and haven't gotten a Boomsaw shirt. So
yeah,
you're not alone.
Boomsaw, I heard they're really comfortable, dry fit, all this stuff. Still, I mean, I every time... My wife is really good at Amazon Prime. I mean, all these boxes show up. I'm so excited to open one up and get a Boomsaw shirt. So, yeah, no.
What a better way to celebrate a Red Sox World Championship than getting something like that in the mail, Mike. So it's a twofer.
Well, just deliver it. Just deliver it.
All right.
We can all be happy.
Hand deliver. All right, Mike. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. That was Mike Lowell joining us on the horn. As they call it.
Oh, on the horn.
On the horn. Bradford and Reamer, we'll be right back.
You're locked in with Rob Bradford and Alex Reamer on Sports Radio WEEI.
All right, Rob. 3 hours, they flew right by.
There you go.
Flew right by.
That's how we do.
Thanks to Joe Kelly. Thanks to Mike Lowell for joining us on the horn today.
Yes.
Chris Schein, fantastic job behind the glass. Big day tomorrow, NFL Sunday, Mutke Fourier, 9 o'clock. Patriots Bears reaction all day. World Series talk.
Don't you skip over the fantasy football hour.
Fantasy football hour with our star columnist, Jim Hackett, as well.
Absolutely.
Yes, the best columnist in this city. NLCS coming up tonight. Who will the Red Sox play? Brewers, Dodgers? You have to listen to find out. How's that for a tease?
Who knew?
How's that for a tease?
Who knows?
See ya. We're out of here.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.